Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It was like part of the. I remember him being part of the canon. That's true. Well, it's
that's
like
what Saint Lewis, C.S. Lewis stands for.
Yeah,
it's a C. Christmas Santa Lewis.
Hello and welcome to Bear, Otter, and the Twink, unrelated to Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, of course. My name is James. Who else is here today?
I'm the Twink, and I've been trapped in the back of a closet.
I'm the Otter. I am nipple deep in the pool, but I do have an urchin on my chest, and it looks delicious.
Cracking open clams.
Yeah.
They always look like they have so much fun doing that, huh?
Oh, yeah, dude. I saw a video on Instagram. I have a lot of... Now my Instagram algorithm's changed a bit. Transformers and muscle mommies still, but now a lot of cute animals. And I saw one where some guy had. Have you ever eaten clams or mussels or anything?
Yeah, I slurped them down.
Yeah, you know, they stay. You can keep them together even when they're boiled. They've got the little cartilaginous hinge there, right? Somebody was just putting bar clam shells that still had the hinge on an otter's head, and it was just like taking them off, looking at them, seeing that they're empty, putting them in its lap, and just like stacking clams like dishes on its lap, which was very cute.
They're adorable, much like cats. They're adorable for like terrifying killing machine.
Yeah, yes.
Our otters.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Terrible fangs, terrible penchant for killing and then also torturing their prey.
That's
right.
Is it a weasel or a rodent?
I think it's a weasel.
Because Jamie, I'm going to Google this. Don't make any jokes.
Okay, I gave Ethan... I poked fun at him for Googling and not hearing my jokes sometimes.
It is a weasel. Yeah. Mustelidae. It's a weasel, like a skunk.
If you guys,
or a weasel.
Speaking of cute animals, if you do hear any trilling or meowing, my cat turned 1 year old today. 1 year old. And she's in heat and nuzzling everything in my room right now.
Yeah, that's very frisky.
So I want to thank some folks who joined Prime. We got Reverse Mermaid. Thank you so much. Kokum Slayer. Thanks for joining. I met you on Twitch before you joined the Discord. So super cool to see you come over and even become Prime sub. And Kimchi.
Reverse Mermaid. Now, a normal man would say that that's top half fish, lady legs on the bottom, right? What if the percentage of the animal and the person that you combined, it's just
was like hot dog style instead of hamburger style.
Yeah, what if it was thinking, like a Harvey Dent? Like,
Two-Face? Where
the Two-Face. Side fish, the other side person, right?
Whereas Harvey Dent.
I was just thinking like a tuna fish, but it's kind of oval shaped, so the tail's gone and has two human legs, and the fins, those big fins the tuna has on the side are gone, and it's two regular human arms. So basically what I was like the news reporter from SpongeBob.
Okay, yeah. Just the proportions be different. You can also do like we can also do like the hot dog slice, but like front to back. Where like you're looking at me, I'm a person, but like suddenly there's a human chasing carnivore out there. I lie on my stomach, I just look like a fish. Right?
Right. Yeah.
I kinda like the we're the fish people in Zelda, I'm forgetting the names of them for a second.
The Zora.
I like that they have the tails on the back of their heads, like the fish tails on the back of the head. That's kind of a good split. Yeah. Anyways, we got a lot of stuff to get into today.
Wait, before we get into that stuff, skunks aren't weasels. They share
Were mustelids.
They share the same superfamily, Mustelidae, of which mustelids are, but they are Mephitidae.
Mephitids. Right.
So they're cousins. They're cousins.
Yeah.
Not siblings.
Okay.
Lutra.
We don't spread misinformation here. We've never said a wrong thing on this podcast. We've only ever said
the fake otter news would be a cancelable offense if we got the fake otter news.
Yeah, the otters have the people, that's for sure. Yeah.
Leaked DMs from the lore boys. Like, I think otters are weasels. It's like, I can't fucking believe this.
Lying on the Otter News Network.
All right. So today we're going to cover some Narnia stuff. That's a really big, big world to cover. That's like saying we're going to cover like Lord of the Rings or something like that. It's like a multiple books. There's a lot of lore. So what are we going to do? We're going to focus in on the creation myth, how the world of Narnia was created, and also one of the most important characters in The Magician's Nephew. We're going to follow Diggory Kirk. And he is really similar to C.S. Lewis himself, actually. I think C.S. Lewis really wrote himself into this role of Diggory.
Oh, he's the Gary Stu of the story.
Right.
So my fun fact for the Narnia books is the only book that I've started to read. I read the first few chapters of The Magician's Nephew.
Great.
And I was deeply confused as to what was going on because it's like the sixth book in the series.
It's the sixth book. So this is the thing. That shouldn't confuse you, though. I think you were just kid dumb because when they re-chronicled it, if you buy like the box set now,
yeah,
it will put Magician's Nephew first.
Oh, yeah.
It's a prequel.
Oh, there you go.
I see.
And that's whenever I was a kid, I had a book. It was like giant, like bigger than most books that you would have. And it had every single Chronicles of Narnia book in it. And Magician's Nephew was listed first in that book.
And okay.
I think, who was it? It was like Harper, someone
Harper Collins is a publisher.
Yeah. Harper Collins is the one who reordered it originally. And now most modern ones show it first. Because it does tell the story of how people ended up in Narnia, and it tells the middle third of the book is the creation myth, and we're going to have a nice big quote from that and how Narnia came to be. And then there's the end of the book where you basically have to solve a problem. That we're gonna talk about all of this. This is like if you wanted to read The Magician's Nephew now, I'd say maybe skip this one, but there's a lot of good stuff here, and it leads right up into The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where there's a movie. There's a lot more pop culture stuff around, I guess.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so what do you guys know about it so far? I guess I want to just get a baseline.
So I know that he was friends, C.S. Lewis was friends with Tolkien, right? And they... Yeah. Would share a lot of world building stuff at the time, and they would write long letters back and forth to each other talking about, you know, how they were building their world. So I assume there's going to be some parallels we can draw. And you already spoiled a small one for us before we started recording.
I was going to say that this is Lord of the Rings meets Christianity.
Yeah.
And exactly. You'll see that a lot. Yeah.
Tolkien also a devout Catholic.
Very,
Lord of the Rings
Catholic,
is already Christian.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just more hands on. So like Aslan is Jesus, right? Is like the. And this is all stuff that I have, exactly, it's a meme, and this is all stuff that I have heard before, I have no context for. I saw the movie, the first one, was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Right, yeah.
Which was that, so in the original publishing order of the books, was that the first one?
That, I don't know. That would be a good one to Google if you want to Google.
If we discount the Magician's Nephew.
All I know for sure chronologically, like I think it's the first one because chronologically the Magician's Nephew leads right up into the beginning.
Yeah, it's Magician's Nephew, which was written in 1955.
Yeah.
And then The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which was written in 1950.
Yeah.
Then it's Horse and His Body, which was written in 1954. Then it was Prince Caspian, which was written in 1951. So there's also another prequel, I guess, which is jammed into the middle of the...
I read Prince Caspian as well when I was young, although I retained almost nothing of it. I remembered enough of The Magician's Nephew that I was ringing a lot of bells today when I was doing my research, but
right. I think there was a Prince Caspian. There was a movie.
There's
Prince
three Caspian Narnia too, right? Films. Yeah, I've seen the first one. One of them is Prince Caspian. And then there's another one that it's not the Voyage of the Demeter. It's the Voyage of some other ship. There's a different
Voyage
ship.
Of the Dolphin Treader.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well,
which is not the last book in the series. So I guess I don't know if the production just like ran out of money and they decided it wasn't worth it, or if there is like a decent end point there. Obviously we're not going to talk about that today, but
I'm kind of glad though, because that means you guys don't know a ton about Magician's Nephew. You started to read it, so there might be, like me, you might remember some of these scenes, but
I read, I think, the first chapter.
Okay.
Maybe two. I don't know.
I didn't know it existed. So I had Lion, the Witch of the Wardrobe. And after failing to read The Lord of the Rings, I was just like, this one's probably also too hard. So I moved on to Treasure Island.
This one was
also
a,
didn't finish.
I did a book report on Treasure Island in grade six and read 12 pages in the back cover. Got an A+ on it. So.
Hell yeah, dude. School's fake. Drop out now.
Yeah. This, the story we're going to be covering today, we start with Diggory Kirk. By the way, Narnia was created in the Earth world, Earth year 1900. Diggory Clark being, or Kirk being born 1888. So he's a kid when this happens.
Okay.
He's 12
years old.
From London, this boy is. Or he's living in London at the time.
Oh, he's 12 in London in 1900. So he's, two, 3 years from retirement at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
At the textile mill.
Yeah. To go covered in soot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luckily.
To sweep chimneys anymore. He's too old. He's outgrown the game.
Luckily, he escapes the hell that is London.
I only wish that for anybody subjected to it.
Yeah.
I've never been.
So, large scale, his life, if you're asked about him now, you know that he's an intellectual, great traveler. He witnessed both the creation and the destruction of Narnia, which very few humans could say the same. I know more about the creation, don't know more about the destruction. I know there's near the last books, there's like this whole big war and stuff.
I don't even know what was the destruction. That's pretty doom and gloom.
Yeah. But yeah, we're definitely going to cover the creation today, and maybe I can bridge us to the destruction eventually. So Diggory was a kid living with his aunt and uncle in London. His mom, like C.S. Lewis's mom, was very sick. C.S. Lewis lost his mom, I think, at the age of 12. He was very young when he lost him. I know
And Diggory discovered Narnia when he was 12, huh? Some sort of self-insert here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he lived all his life in the country, where he had his own pony, he said. There was a river to go swim in. There was
He was a boy and his pony?
Because
a boy and his horse is one of the books, right?
Oh, of course. That was a pony boy thing. I was like, wait, Outsiders, maybe? Things we had to read in school. I remember we had to read the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in my grade six class. And they would send us to I was of the most advanced reading group, of course, actually. So they would send me to the library, and everybody was got their government issued book, but I brought my own, and it had it had all the books in it. So they'd be like, "Oh, turn to page 161." I'd be like, "Well, what chapter is that? I have my own book."
A fucking loser.
We did A Wrinkle in Time in my sixth grade English class.
In grade six, honestly.
We did A Wrinkle in Time. I remember the oxygen mask flowers is a thing I still remember. Like, they ride a unicorn into space and can breathe through a flower, which is fucking insane.
Right. So Diggory,
go ahead. No, I was going to talk about our grade six. I'm trying to figure out what book I read.
Diggory, he was presumably to wealthy parents because they had a nice big place in the countryside. But this all came to a crash when his mom became ill with a chronic disease. C.S. Lewis's mom had cancer, so we could kind of assume that it's the same thing. It's a children's book, so maybe he didn't want to write the big C in there. But and his father kind of became – C.S. Lewis's father became really distracted and never really recovered from the loss of his mother.
The idea that he's censoring the disease out of this book when he's writing it in the 50s, where you've got motherfucking Roald Dahl out there writing about children dying in industrial accidents in a candy factory.
I mean, when did they start calling it cancer, I guess, right?
Yeah, oh, and not like the consumption, like tuberculosis or whatever?
C.S. Lewis is not as old as Diggory Clark. Like, C.S. Lewis was born in 1898, so he was born 10 years after Diggory Clark right? So
yeah. Regardless, even I kind of like just saying chronic disease, even in a comedy podcast, because it doesn't evoke feelings from people who have lost family members.
Told two dad Pete over here, huh? Not even thinking about my dad, huh? Who died of the big C, the big cancer. True. Come on, Peter. Come on.
True.
Yeah. This guy, he's got two parents. He loves to flaunt it. He loves to be like, just talk about it on a comedy podcast.
Having parents.
Yeah.
Having parents is easy, says Peter.
Yeah, and I also don't have my mom, and this guy just fucking rubs it in her face every week.
All the fucking time.
I like to open every time we connect to Discord, I like to talk a big, very like heartwarming story about both my parents individually.
Yeah. So back to Diggory, where he's he also has a sick mom, and his father has to go to India for work in the story, which I guess is a metaphor for being so struck with grief you can barely take care of your son is going to India.
I mean, if he was like a British colonial governor or something, he probably did have like people to oppress.
The British East Indies Company was a pretty big deal that probably employed a lot of people, right? So
yeah. So Diggory just hates the city. He hates London because all it means is he had to move there with his sick mother, live with his aunt and uncle, and his dad's gone now. It's just from being a child to having all these adult problems and being in a stuffed row of homes that were, yeah. He'd rather be out in the country.
Thick smokestacks of coal, just like blotting out the sun, rivers full of cholera and shit. Like, darling, you look sick. Let's move away from the countryside into the city. You'll be much healthier there. Well, off to India, I guess. Like, this feels like a hit job. This guy was just came here to kill his wife. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Absolutely. So at the beginning of the book, this is the first chapter that maybe will ring a bell. We see a young girl named Polly Plummer, and I put a picture. This the interaction is the first picture. It's Polly A. Plummer, and she sees this little boy whose face is all dirty because he'd been crying and he'd been touching his face with his dirty hands. Mm-hmm. Sorry,
I touched my mother and she's diseased. Now I have the disease all over my face, you see.
Yeah, and the Polly Plummer, first thing she does, seeing a kid crying next to her house, starts making fun of him.
Yeah, Nash, dude. Yeah. It's the fucking 1900s. Wake up, Diggory.
Yeah. His name was a point of making fun of him, too. Who's called Diggory?
Diggory, stupid shittery. Hmm? Yeah.
Have you been diggering in the garden with your face? Yeah. So this is what happens. Eventually she sees that, okay, no, actually this guy's sad and his mom's sick. So they become friends. And they all live in these houses that are connected. It's like they're like a family lives in one unit that has an upstairs and a downstairs and it goes on. Right.
Yeah. It's called like a row house. They're big in housing projects and whatnot. I know like,
when was the Great Fire of London? It must have been in the 1800s, right? Because like,
yeah, well, it's because when you had 100 families living in row homes, insulated with cedar dust. That's how my dad's house went up so fast. Is because his attic was full of cedar dust. It was so old. So
that's not a good thing to put in your attic.
Yeah,
he was gonna flip it. He's gonna flip it. Make a good deal. Cedar dust. It's on. It's going up, baby.
one day, Petey, all this cedar dust will be yours.
There's always money in the cedar dust.
Hey, I'm your dad.
The advantages of having a dad is getting free cedar dust
whenever you want it. every time he comes over, he just hands you a pocket full of cedar dust.
Yeah, it's like Shawshank.
Yeah. Yeah. Something nice, huh?
Only dust I got from my mom was the urn. Jeez.
Oh, no.
Which we scattered in a very beautiful place. But anyways, nice. In the midst of getting to know his new friend Polly, he finds out that in the attic of all these roof homes, they're connected. So you could travel from one home to another just by like squeezing yourself up in this crawl space, and you could go through the top of everybody's house and drop into another person's house.
Okay.
So they did the math. They're like, we want to go to our next door house and we'll figure it out. They took half a candle and they avoided the cedar dust. And they
started the second Great Fire of London.
Oh, fuck.
Get out of here, horny cat.
Oh, horny cat. Horny cat alert. Go. Horny cat alert.
Right. So yeah, they go through all of the attic and they pop out. After they did their math, they figured out how to come out to the second house after how many paces or whatever. And they're in what looks like a secret laboratory or like a magician's office. It's okay. This is magician's nephew. Diggory will be the magician's nephew because he found out his uncle Andrew is been tinkering. He's like an alchemist. And at first, Andrew scolds them for finding his secret lab. Because he comes upon them.
He's like stuffing a bunch of gay porn into a closet. He's like, you found my alchemy materials. Oh no, you shouldn't have done this.
Yeah. 1900s England, it wasn't good.
Just a bunch of beakers. He's like, oh no, my alchemy. This is just, oh no.
And then they see two rings. The ring is actually the last photo that I showed you, but there's a yellow ring and a green ring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're just sitting on
rings to rule them all.
Yes, so that's another thing that C.S. Lewis and Lord of the Rings guy Tolkien will have in common is there's rings.
Lord of the Rings guy.
Lord of the Rings guy, love of rings.
Yep. So at first he scolds them, but then he says, "Oh, actually, Polly, would you like this yellow ring?" And she's like, absolutely. She'd been staring at it the whole time, right? And as she approaches this is a tricky uncle. This is a bad guy, by the way, but for doing
this. Who's the magician? Oh. You can't trust him.
No, yeah. And he goes, he gestures to it. She walks over it. She feels a hum in her ears as she gets closer and closer to this ring. And as she picks up and puts on the yellow ring, she vanishes from existence.
Okay.
And now the uncle says, oh, it worked. It worked. And he finds out, or he tells the boy that he made her transport to a different dimension. And from that dimension, she can't get back because she needs the green ring to get back.
And then he twirls his mustache and he grabs like another woman out of the closet in a big sack that he's going to tie to some railroad tracks, presumably, right?
Absolutely.
He's got a stovepipe hat in his cloak. He's just like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the uncle says, well, now, Diggory, if you want to save your friend, you're going to have to follow her. And I don't know. Actually, now that I think of it, she had the yellow ring. So I think she touched it and she vanished and went into it, but the yellow ring still was there. So he took the yellow ring, went and followed after her, holding the green ring as well. To come bring her back.
Okay,
this is the plan.
We got a horny cat, folks.
Yeah, sorry, she's caught. I'm gonna lock her out as soon as I can stand up from my chair.
She's got in trouble.
Yeah, she's like hitting my mic and stuff.
Or a cold shower.
Yeah, she's like, Louise.
How do you think of baseball?
Yeah. So the evil Uncle Andrew sends him in. And this is where we get to the wood between worlds, which is the next picture after Polly and stuff.
Great name for a place, honestly.
Yeah. This is the coolest thing. I remember reading about this as a kid and like my imagination just going wild. And I was young enough, too, that I was, like, kind of tying it to Mario 64 paintings, which is what these pools are really like.
Okay.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So he comes out of our universe's pool, and he looks around, and there's no one there. Fun fact, the only things that might actually live there are probably guinea pigs. Because Andrew would send guinea pigs into the other world first, but realized...
Oh, as his test subjects?
Oh, that's very cute.
But they didn't know how to get back because they couldn't green. So that's why he sent a human child, his neighbor's kid.
This is very, like, very turn of the 20th century science, right? Like, oh, you found a boy? Yeah, just get him to do it. Like, these are children. They're expendable. Go nuts, kids. Like,
yeah. So, he wakes up. It's weird, though, because he feels like he's not standing, not sitting on his whole journey there. And then he realizes in water, but he gets out, but he's not wet. It's all very, like, it's hard to hold on to any of these feelings. Yeah, exactly.
Not,
Well, he's between worlds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, nonsensical.
Ethereal.
Ethereal, yeah.
Yeah.
It's It's like he's completely covered in Vicks Vapo Rub.
It's like you're standing in a ghost.
Yeah.
In a ghost?
Yeah, inside. If you accidentally stood on inside of a ghost.
Yeah. And then he comes out and he talks to Polly. And he's like, he asks her, like, oh, when did you get here? And she says, I've always been here. And he replies, oh, uh-oh. I've always been here, too. Even though okay. they just arrived. It just implies that, like, time doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But they look around and there's not just like 5 pools. There's not just 10 pools. There's pools as long as the eye can see.
Okay.
And in the Chronicles of Narnia, like, as far as I know, so far from what I've read, we only go in 2 of those pools. Or 3 if you count Earth. So there could be if C.S. Lewis was still kicking, he could really dive into a lot more pools in different universes.
Yeah, if he was 142 and still writing.
Yeah. Or yeah, if anyone wants to pick up where he left off, there's a lot, which I'm sure a lot of people have. They've tried. Yeah. Done fanfic and stuff. But this is so, so cool. Like that. Imagine being in a space between time and this like ethereal forest where there's pools that every single one brings you to a whole new universe. I think is a very cool thing to read about. And I remember even as a kid, like that just really resonating with me. And that
it's a great picture. And again, this is like with a lot of Tolkien stuff too, like this concept of a multiverse. Like I'm sure that C.S. Lewis didn't create the first version of it ever. Probably not the first version that he heard of. But seeing these kind of like progenitor types to something that we would consider very like stereotypical now, and knowing that like, oh no, this was like before the internet and everybody knew about these stories that had these things in them is always a very cool thing. The art itself too, I don't know where you got this painting. I assume it's somebody's just painting of this thing from the book because they're very famous books. It is very reminiscent of in Princess Mononoke, the Studio Ghibli film. Where you meet the spirit of the forest, just kind of these like standing pools or these pools of standing water in this like deep forest, essentially. Very evocative, I think.
Yeah. Super cool. So the kids, they're there and he has the green ring. So he says, well, Polly, I can take you home now. Let's get you home because I don't want to get lost. But he looks around and it dawns on him that this is a multiverse. And if I came out of one pool, what's in all the other pools?
It Voyage of the Dawn Treaders on him.
Yeah.
I almost said the exact same thing.
And we got the same Cyberpunk DLC ending, yeah, right? Yeah, we're on the same wave for sure.
So what's he comes up with a plan. He says, what we'll do is we'll go back to Earth really quick, but what we'll do is we'll put the yellow ring right back on and we're going to come back. And then we'll check out the other pools. Once we figure out we can get home, once we get the bus home figured out, then we can explore a bit. We'll come home whenever we want.
We always just one extra dimension after work. We don't have to go crazy. Exactly. Right? We're just going to step out.
Yep. So none of this is written down, by the way. This is all I've been in my brain. Oh. But I'm just so into the story right now. And what they do is they hop in. So they go back home. They see Andrew. Andrew's like, hey. And then they just disappear again.
Okay. Yeah. You son of a bitch.
He's just got like an empty bag labeled guinea pigs. He's like trying to add it to them.
Got 2 little guinea pig caskets that he's trying to make bigger. Like.
What they do first is they're about to walk away and they're like, oh, wait, there's like infinite pools. We should probably put a marker where home is. So they organize some sticks and some greenery to put a little post that said, this is Earth. This is home.
We'll find it in this infinite forest. Surely.
Yeah.
They just have like an unemptied chamber pot and a bunch of coal soot. And they're just like, this pool goes back to London.
Yeah.
This pool goes to a magician's attic.
Yeah. True. Yeah, and so they hop into one world. The first world that they go into is completely destroyed. Just ashes, nothing left. All that's left is a single witch in a cage and a bell next to her that you might know as the White Witch. Her name is Jadis at this point.
Okay.
So this is in the future. They've witnessed the future of Narnia at some point. Because I know the White Witch.
She comes from another world. They're gonna lose her.
This is Ethan's on the right track. This is Charn, a destroyed world by Jadis, And she, like, well, let me tell you the story of James.
Oh, please, I'm reformed. I'm reformed. You can let me out. Ring the bell. Let me out. I won't do this to another world. I promise.
Basically, we find out that Charn used to be a normal old place. And the picture that I sent you of that woman there was the White Witch pre destroying her own universe and world.
Oh, this gorgeous Persian woman?
Exactly.
Yep. Hell yeah.
And it's so she's said to be half Jin, D-G-I-N-N, like the magical from the Middle East, basically.
Yeah.
And half giant. She's 7 feet tall.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah, just checking a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can grant wishes and can I can sit on her lap?
I was just thinking, nice,
tall, gorgeous Arab lady. Let's fucking go, dude.
Yeah. Who can also grant wishes?
Yeah, she
I wish that too, yeah.
Oh, and tell me, what do you wish for? I wish for a tall, gorgeous Arab lady.
Yeah.
Oh, you. No, oh. I need another.
Another one.
Maybe she could grant wishes. That's definitely not her shtick. She could just do magic, is more what it means by djinn. And
oh, please, I'll do magic for you. Let me out of the cage. Come on. Come on. I won't do this to another world. I promise. I'll give you a wish. Please. I'll do some magic.
Pulling guinea pigs out of her hat.
Yeah. We're going to let's turn back time like millennia in Charn for a second.
Okay.
She's still a princess. She has a beautiful sister. She has a family that is a royal family. Civilization is going well. Everyone has everything they'd ever want.
Civilization is going well. Completely undestroyed at this time.
Civilization is going well. What a beautiful fantasy world C.S. Lewis has created here.
But our friend Jadis, who becomes the White Witch, she gets into the dark magic. She starts reading.
No.
And she figures out the one word that can destroy every life being in the universe except for you.
Like, okay, localized universe? Like, in Charn, essentially.
Charn is like, the place we land is like a planet, but it's also kind of a universe. Narnia is going to be like a planet, but sort of a universe. Like,
yeah, I'm just kidding. Like, she doesn't have the WMD code for, like, all worlds. Right away, like that's not her. Why people are just like freeing her from cages and stuff.
On Charn, she has this code at the time of the civilization.
Yeah. Okay,
and her sister learns about it, and they agree. They end up getting a fight. There ends up being a big war in Charn, and it's her against her army against her sister's army, and they fucking cat, man.
speaking of dark magic, cat in Jamie's house is tearing him apart.
It's her birthday. I'll let her get away with it. Yeah, so the sisters are fighting, but they know about this like WMD, this word that destroys everyone except yourself. And at the end of the day, we're still sisters. We don't want to kill each other. We don't want to kill everything. What's it all for if we kill everything?
Kill everyone else in the universe except for you, sister. So I won't use the word.
Yeah. So they basically swear, they shake hands. Let's never say that word. It's we're going to leave magic out of it. We're going to fight this with men. We're going to use their lives.
Yeah,
of course.
And remember, no cussing.
Yeah. So what they end up doing is the sister of Jadis ends up actually really winning the war. She's pushing the front all the way up to Jadis's front step.
Hey, but remember, we promise not to use those WMDs, huh? Remember.
Yeah.
I'm going to crush you in the war and threaten all your power. Let's remember not to use the word, huh?
Jadis waits until her very last man falls and then
obviously
says the word.
She just I mean, points at a guy on the battle. She's just like, I'm going to say it.
He's just, and he's like, Narnia.
Yeah. This is pretty amazing, though, that like this is I guess this is like the start, like the early rumblings of the Cold War, right? When Lewis was writing this in 1955. So like this is very early Cold War, essentially, but very much a cautionary tale about how that would end if you invade Russia, the USSR.
Except it's not just Putin left at the end.
Yeah.
It's not just Biden or whoever. Yeah.
Biden in a cage ringing a bell.
Yeah, let me out, Jack. I won't say it.
So, yeah, that's the story. And in her last moments, her sister's last moments, she imprisons her sister. So she says the word, everything's about to come crumbling down. And right before the sister dies, she like ensnares Cagius and gets her in a cage with a bell next to
it. It was insane action. It was a crazy contraption.
And so, yeah, Diggory and Polly show up. The nice witch lady says, oh, would you please ring the bell, dearie? Like kind of like you were saying, and convinces him. He rings the bell.
So, you got to be suspicious. Standing in a fucking scorched earth, like blasted ruin of a world, and like here's the one person that's alive for the miles that you can see in any direction. Like
you probably related to her. They're both covered in soot. The 12-year-old boy.
True, that's true.
There's a kindred spirit. Yeah, I guess. Oh,
also, like little boys getting tricked because I've seen the first film. Like she gives the white. She gives like the one of the little boys of the. It's what three siblings that go through the wardrobe or whatever, right?
There's the Pevensey children, which I think there's five of them total. There's a lot. Right,
my God. Anyway, one of them gets...
That's be another story.
What, like, she doesn't even need to waterboard the fucking kid. She gives him, like, Jell-O. Right? Yeah. She gives him Turkish Delight. And it's
he's the youngest of them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, that's in line The Witch of the Wardrobe.
Yeah.
By the way, whenever they ask the question, what fantasy... food would you like, or what book food would you like to try? My answer for the longest time was the Turkish Delight that made Edmund basically sell out his siblings.
Yeah.
I want to try how good that Turkish Delight must have been. If you're
Turkish Delight for just
family.
Like gelatin covered in powdered sugar is pretty enjoyable, I have to say.
That
I don't know if I've had a Turkish Delight. I thought I had, and then you just described it as gelatin covered in powdered sugar. I was like, oh, maybe I haven't had it.
It is what it is.
I was thinking of baklava. I've had baklava.
Baklava's also good.
Fun fact, Edmund sells out his siblings for the Turkish Delight to the White Witch in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And Edmund is going to die for that fact at a certain point. Aslan gives his whole ass life for it and then gets resurrected, blah, 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 Jesus.
Well,
but,
Jesus.
Yeah.
But another fun fact, Tricking Little Boys is the name of Pete's autobiography.
I got two parents and your kids aren't safe. Yeah, so rang the bell, released Charn's former empress and his destroyer Jadis, who became the White Witch. And after they released her, they try to escape via the ring, go back to the wood. Jadis grabs onto their coattails, and all of a sudden
also ports out.
Yeah, all of a sudden we've got a witch in London. And from there, I think it's a good time to take our break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, so welcome back. Bear Otter and the Twink here. And we left off with a wicked witch following two children back to London, ending up in Andrew's study. And Jadis, what she does best is cause a good deal of commotion. She's notably much paler, thinner, less strong in this world. This is not her native land, so she's a little bit weaker.
Not her traditional milieu.
Yeah. So she's
to know that the color of the sun affects immigrants or whatever happens with Superman, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and she's not able to, like, blow up the world, but she's able to cause some hijinks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, sure. I mean, I'd be able to blow up the world, but what if?
Well, she needs to get the kill code for London, right?
Yeah, I cursed you to have boils on your legs.
Yeah, and a mailman just falls over and grows bubbles on his legs. And...
Oh, I got some boils on my legs. Oh, no, will you be able to finish your mail route? Yeah, I think so. It's just a little uncomfortable.
Rain or shine.
Laying on the ground, someone throws their latrine bucket out the window on him.
Rain or shine, they didn't say rain of what?
Yeah,
that's true. Boils or frogs.
Plus or pee-pee or poo-poo.
The true. Biblical plagues true. Still get your mail.
Yeah. Neither rain nor shine nor sleet nor biblical plagues. that's the credo of the U.S. Postal Service.
Yes.
I haven't read this in a long time. I know that she like uproots a lamppost and like throws it at someone
like a javelin.
Yeah, other than that,
I picture like a gorilla throwing a log.
Oh, like
throwing it sideways. Okay. You know, it's still doing a lot of damage. Lamppost.
Yep.
Yeah, you could take out multiple guys like bowling pins with that.
Yeah.
And they would obviously make the comedy bowling pin noise. Yeah. All the bobbies that get knocked over. Like,
I assume she tries to like steal the heart of like a young pretty woman that she finds. Does she turn out to be Jack the Ripper killing all these like young pretty prostitutes to steal their youth and vigor?
She could be. She could be. Yeah.
Typical witch stuff, right? Does she like blight a local farmer's
yeah, I was gonna kill somebody's crops. Yeah,
for 1 year, one specific farmer's crops fail that 1 year, and it's her fault.
Go to the post office and switch all letters around.
Yep.
Like the Grinch.
Well, he was a witch when you think about it, right?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I think that the Puritan news.
Oh, you Max guys just got a parallel. It's canon that Christmas does not exist. In the Rich's way, Witch's Reign. Rich's Reign.
Oh, so Grinch is the kill code for the universe. So she stole Christmas, and then it was just a blasted wasteland, and she was put in a cage by the last surviving Whos.
And whenever she takes over much later in The Witch, The Lion, The Witch, and The Wardrobe, she bans Santa from Narnia, so he cannot deliver gifts.
The Santa, the real guy, obviously, who's like part of the. I remember him being part of the canon. That's true. Well,
that's what S. Right? Lewis, C.S. Lewis stands for.
Yeah,
let's see, Christmas Santa Lewis.
Oh, by the way, do you guys know what C.S. Lewis? The first name he used to go by?
Christmas.
No,
I just said it.
Jack. Okay. Because. He had a really terrible childhood.
And he was with Joe Biden after Joe Biden failed to kill his sister.
Yeah.
They totally put her in a cage.
It's actually a much sadder reason. He had a childhood dog named Jack that was run over by a carriage wheel when he was five. Aww. And then he took on the name Jack.
His parents were like, I wish it were you, so we're going to call you Jack.
His mom croaked over her illness.
I wish it was you. It's like Tony Soprano's mother in the hospital bed, just like this miserable old battle axe.
Right. So all this hijinks is happening. She runs over a dog in a carriage. The witch is doing all this stuff in London that is bad.
Yeah.
Starting
just panic
fires
on the streets.
Pooping in the river. Oh no, wait, everyone was pooping in the river. Probably exploiting workers. Oh no, wait, everyone was exploiting workers. Probably abusing children. Oh no, gosh, everyone was abusing children. Probably
spreading
not giving
disease.
Women equal rights. Oh, spreading disease. Yeah, no, everyone was doing those things. What would be an evil thing to do in 1900s London?
This is a tough one, huh? Vote.
Manifest destiny in places.
Yeah. Oh yeah, if she tried to vote, then that'd be pretty evil in 1900s London.
Yeah. So the kids needed a plan. So what they did is they used the ring again to go back to try and get her out of the world that they're in and dump her in another pool kind of thing.
We got to stop her. She's throwing light posts at everybody. She's the mayor soon.
We need to find one of these pools that leads to a place with no lamp posts.
Yeah. Lighting post.
great reference to a 2008 meme.
It's still relevant. There's this one guy on Call of Duty who only uses the electric grenades, and there's proximity chat. He goes, okay. lightning bolt, and you just hear the person. They're like, come on, man, this is so stupid. Because they can't do anything, and then he goes, hellfire, and then shoots them, and they die. But I think it's still a fun thing to say.
That is very silly.
Anyway, so yeah, the kids need to get rid of it. They use the ring.
It
they
being just a witch.
Yeah, her. What they ended up doing, though, they ended up taking Diggory, Polly, and Uncle Andrew, Jadis, along with a cab driver and his horse. Like, it just happened everyone was touching at this moment.
Okay,
and
not like a consenting cab driver.
I think they were like...
have shanghaied this poor man.
Yeah, they absolutely have. And he's a simple man. And they end up like splooshing out of one into another pool. And they're in Narnia pre-creation. It's black as, like, not even black. It's nothing. It's
the before Let There Be Light in Genesis, sort of. Like a this complete exactly. and total absence of light. It'd be so funny if it was just like a Brooklyn cab driver from like the 70s, just like a fat white dude. And he's sitting there, he's just like completely holding it together with his little flat cap. And he's just like looking around and just like out in the ceaseless void of pre-creation Narnia, just like turns the meter on. And it's just like starts ticking up super fast.
So this is like pre-cars too, right? So it's like an actual carriage.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
But
yeah, I assume they had a little like digital
the clock on the butt of a horse,
you know?
No, what you do is you take string and you put it on the outside of the, like, you know, the point of the wheel, and you see how much string wraps around the wheel from destination to destination, and that's how long you have to pay, right?
Oh.
Okay. I've already thought this out, dude.
It's a horse-powered butt clock. That's my that's my take on it, is horse-powered butt clock. It's a horse-powered butt clock.
Well, what you really should picture, if we're sticking to the lore, is all of these folks, the witch, the lion, the wardrobe, not those. gotta cut you off of the past there. we all know each other very well at this point.
And I mean, so, me and Pete are nailing the themes of this children's book that's been around for 70 years. Really nailing, honestly. Yeah.
So picture with me Diggory, Polly, Andrew, Jadis, and the witch all on a cab, on just in the back of a carriage with the guy driving and a horse. And everything is completely dark and silent. And I have a quote here, our first quote. In the darkness, something was happening at once. A voice had begun to sing. It was very far away, and Diggory found it hard to decide what direction it was coming from. Sometimes it seemed to come from all directions at once. Sometimes he thought it was coming out of the earth beneath him. Its lower notes were deep enough to be the voice of the earth herself. There were no words. It was hardly a tune, but it's beyond comparison. The most beautiful sound he had ever heard. It was so beautiful he could hardly bear it. So that's the beginning
I
of
want
it.
Chicken, I want liver. Meow mix, meow mix, please the liver. Just with a top hat walking through the hills, like singing to himself.
do you have to pay surge pricing for like taking this Uber out of time?
At an extra-dimensional space, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Demand wouldn't be very high in a place with no people, so I couldn't imagine search prices kick in.
Yeah. I have, like, the biggest quote I've ever done coming up next, but this is, like, a really beautiful telling from C.S. Lewis of how the Earth was put together, or how Narnia was put together. Anything to say before we hop into it? Because it's going to be a big one.
Bazinga.
Oh, you said it. You did it. This is like the Big Bang Theory for Narnia, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Dude, I mean...
Bazinga, I mean, shook the foundation of the earth, the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And on the first day, God said, let there be Bazinga.
Yeah.
I feel like we've made that exact joke.
I guarantee. Oh,
yeah. Somewhere. Okay. I'm going to take a drink and hop into
Doing this for 7 years, I just like constantly feel like we're just running in circles.
Yeah. I've told the story. I've heard this from other podcasters too. Like, I heard this from Stavi talking about listening to old Cumtown episodes, is that even if you listen to old episodes, I find myself laughing at the same points that I normally laugh, thinking of the same jokes that I, because we're just running through the same old tracks in our brain over and over again. But anyways, so then two wonders happened at the same moment. One was that the voice suddenly was joined by other voices, more voices than you could possibly count. They were in harmony with it, but higher up on the scale, cold, tingling, silvery voices. The second wonder was the blackness overhead. All at once was blazing with stars. They didn't come out gently one by one as they do on a summer evening. One moment there was nothing but darkness. Next moment, 1,000,000 points of light leaped out. Single stars, constellations, planets, bigger and brighter than any in our world. There were no clouds. The new stars and the new voices began at exactly the same time. If you had seen and heard it, as Diggory did, you would have felt quite certain that the stars themselves who were singing, and that it was the first voice, the deep one, that had made them appear and made them sing. "Glory be," said the cabbie. "I'd have been a better man myself if I'd known these things were like this." He's a simple man, but he got all wrapped up.
Yeah, he is.
I'll hop back into it just to finish the second half here. And far away and down near the horizon, the sky began to turn gray. A light wind, very fresh, began to stir. The sky that in one place grew slowly and steadily paler. You could see shapes of hills standing up dark against it. And all the time, the voice went on singing. The eastern sky changed from white to pink and from pink to gold. The voice rose and rose till the air was shaking with it. And just as it swelled to the mightiest and most glorious sound it had yet produced, the sun arose. Diggory had never seen such a sun. You can imagine that it laughed for joy as it came up. And its beams shot across the land. The travelers could see it for the very first time what sort of place they were in. It was a valley through which a broad, swift river found its way, flowing eastward towards the sun. Southward, there were mountains. Northward, there were lower hills. But it was the valley of a mere earth, rock, and water. There was not a tree, a bush, blade of grass to be seen yet. The earth was of many colors. They were fresh, hot, and vivid. They made you feel excited until you saw the singer himself, and you forgot everything else. So Narnia is born, Aslan's king, and C.S. Lewis is a good writer, huh?
You gotta respect that Brooklyn cabbie just being like, "Holy shit, I never thought I'd see the dawn of creation like that."
I love this attitude. It's just like, oh, it's like I would have been a better guy if I had. It's like if all my fares took me to a different universe.
It's very.
I wouldn't run so many dogs if I knew there was a heaven.
Very Rodney Dangerfield. Like, hey, whoa, I would have worn a nicer shirt if I'd have known I was going to behold the beauty of creation today. Huh?
Oh, ooh, hey, witness the face of God himself. Ooh, I'm underdressed.
Instead of "we're back," it's "he's back," and it's Aslan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is John Goodman dinosaur.
Oh, is it Goodman? No. I always thought it was Rodney Dangerfield.
It is Rodney Dangerfield. You're thinking of dinosaurs, is the John Goodman dinosaur.
We're back.
We're back is Rodney Dangerfield.
Rodney Dangerfield played like a cat. Or a dog or something.
Oh, I just know he's in the film. Okay. That's all.
Yeah. That's one I gotta rewatch.
We're back.
So the creation happens. Some time passes. Jadis, she scurries away in Narnia. She goes and finds like the most northernmost, like, well, eventually she gets north. Right now she's hiding. Sorry. She scurries off into the non-bushes. Bushes and everything will start to grow. There are forests, there's Ents, there's many magical creatures that end up being home to Narnia.
She goes and huddles behind like a bright pink placeholder sprite for a bush.
She's hiding behind an Ent who's T-posing. Like, And that stands for tree. So Aslan, he was happy, like creation just happened, vibes are good, but Diggory also brought a great evil, someone who could potentially destroy the entire universe of Narnia just as it's created, but she's weaker in other universes, right? So she'll have to take some time to build up her strength,
right?
And she's hiding, so Aslan sends him on a journey to help protect the land from her. We can do some things to make sure the witch can't do her bad magic.
Yeah, me, God. Oh, thankfully they have a 12-year-old to recruit.
Absolutely. But he caused the problem, so he was going to fix it.
Right.
Okay.
That seems like a very God thing to do, right? And he probably knows the outcome already. But
saying he caused the problem is a little bit much for God, too, right? Like.
Yeah.
Come on, buddy. Really? Like, You're going to blame this 12-year-old boy for everything that happened? I feel like the uncle should take responsibility. The fucking magician should probably step up now, right?
Yeah, and be
like,
yeah, exactly.
Hey, God, yeah. Look, I really just wanted to get out of here, but I do think I had a small part to play in this, in tricking him and taking the ring in the first place, and then also not helping him clean up the witch in an effective way.
Yeah, you're not transporting any fruits, yeah, vegetables, or evil witches across the border, are you? With your magical passport rings? Like, nope.
Hey, Diggory, I'm going to need you to shove this magical witch way up your backside, okay?
I just realized that's really funny to picture, like, Diggory talking to this great majestic lion who's a deity, and his uncle hiding behind the carriage behind.
Yeah.
Very funny. So Aslan says, what you got to do? All you got to do is, there's a sacred tree that I know it exists in this world. I created it. And if you go and get a fruit from this tree, you bring it back to me. We're going to plant it together. And this will protect Narnia for centuries to come, which exactly ends up being 898 years until she does come back. But it'll fend her off for a little while.
Okay,
That's a good healthy tree. What's the oldest tree? What do you guys think oldest tree is?
It's named after the oldest guy in the Bible, and
Methuselah.
Yeah, and it's like,
it's like an olive tree, eh?
It's like 2,000 or 3,000 years old. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Great Basin Bristlecone Pine, known as Methuselah. 4,853.
Holy shit.
Even longer.
That's
fucking
old, man.
It's older than Aslan, or our own Aslan, Jesus.
Older than the pyramids. Older than the pyramids. That's almost 5,000 years old. God, imagine if we were 147 years old, or imagine we were born 147 years later, and we could have gone to this tree's 5,000th birthday.
Cool.
Fucking wild.
Yeah, at least we got to Super Bowl 100, right?
We didn't. Yeah. We're not even close.
Are we not? Do we see 50?
Yeah, we've seen 50. It was 50 two or three years ago. I don't remember which one it was this past year, but
I have no idea.
We'll be lucky to make it to 50, or we'll be lucky to make it to 100, but it's possible we'll make it to 100.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll be lucky if the NFL just collapses in on itself and it stops, it ceases being an organization, of course. But
2024 is 58. So we can absolutely host a rager of a Super Bowl 5,000 party for that tree.
Speaking of our minds going on the same track, I'm sure the only reason I knew the name of that tree is that we've talked about it on the podcast before. Maybe. Yeah.
Probably.
It might have been at that. Oh, never mind. Never mind.
we did do bar trivia.
That's what I'm thinking, but I think it was the oldest person in the Bible.
Methuselah. Pete did school us on that.
We're confounded. I'm confounded.
Jamie and I are even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Megan. So he has to go all the way to the Garden of Youth to find a magic tree to get an apple that he can plant. There's an apple.
This story sounds familiar.
Yeah. And he gets there, and there happens to be a snake there who already ate an apple named Jadis. So the witch had made it there first.
Okay.
And she ate an apple, made her immortal.
Dang.
Good for her.
And she's looking at the young boy, and she says, you see that apple you just took? What if you were to eat it? And you could become immortal, just like me.
Why not?
But he wasn't buying it. Not really compelling enough.
After all, why shouldn't I take it?
Yeah. And then she says, which was really compelling to me and would have been compelling to C.S. Lewis, what if you brought this apple home and you saved your mother? Your mother who's sure to die, you could bring her back.
You get it, dude. Come on, bro. Come on, bro. You don't even know, bro. Old PD2 parents over here, huh? Really phoning it in.
Right? And then think of C.S. Lewis in that moment, though, like writing this and like him being able to put himself in his shoes, and like, even if you have both your parents, maybe you could imagine what being sad one day is like. But
that's true. Yes.
Old Pete, I don't have bad days over here.
Yeah. I just don't dwell on them.
Yeah. At this point, when I was reading it, I mentioned in the bonus, I started to tear up. I had to take a lap around my apartment before researching. Like, aww. I had to be like, I was taking it in a lot. Just like the whole thing about
it's just there, like, did you just need an apple?
We had them in the fridge. Fuck.
Dude, I have two pets and both of them are just so bad at consoling me. Ice got up and went and hid in the bathroom.
Oh, good.
And the cat was just like in heat purring on the ground.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I can't count on you guys.
And cats don't have empathy is another problem.
Ice does, but she's scared of whenever I'm sad for some reason. Yeah, so Dickory being... and this is like C.S. Lewis kind of believed in God. Well, he did believe in God a lot, especially later in his life. And he thinks that resisting both the temptations is the right thing to do. And that's where you would find real salvation. Like, even though if your mother died, doing the right thing for God is what it's right. And right. C.S. Lewis believes in God. And he believes that God saw his mother die. But the way that he interprets God is not, it is silence, but it's not like an echoing silence where no one hears you. It's someone looking right back at you, staying silent and understanding.
Right.
Okay. So that's his interpretation that he's spoken publicly about.
It's like in our
interpretation
podcast.
Of God is a comfortable silence. His interpretation of Jesus is a singing lion. Is very...
Hello, my darling. Hello.
I'm glad you got to it first, because I was gonna do the exact same singing frog bit.
We are the same. Ethan and I got caught on identical wavelengths at work last week, which was very, very funny.
Yeah. got outed by our mutual contact at work.
Yeah. Anyways, just to get through this emotional ending here.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. All good.
This is a godless podcast because there's no silence. There's no room to jump in and continue your fucking story.
I just wanted to finish this one story, I guess. One part of the story. He brings the apple back to Aslan, and he presents it to Aslan, and he puts his head down. He kneels and he gives the apple that he's going to plant to save Narnia, this newly created universe, instead of saving himself or his mother, who he cared so deeply about. And he looks up. And there's tears in Aslan's eyes, mirroring him. So Aslan felt all the pain that he did for his mother, but what Aslan did is they dug the hole, he planted the tree, they saved Narnia for the foreseeable future, and Aslan pulled
out 898 years.
Yep, and Aslan pulled out another fruit and gave it to him and said, "Take it to your mother." So by fully submitting to God is how he truly saved his mother.
Okay.
And his mother lived to a ripe old age in the books, which also made me cry because I was like, C.S. Lewis, don't make your mom live. She died. Like this, don't write the fantasy. Like, oh man, it was just a lot.
She just needed the temple.
Yeah,
I gotta say, I'm a big fan of Roald Dahl. He fucking ripped off C.S. Lewis with the fucking Charlie and the Chocolate Factory bit at the end there, right?
Yeah.
Not stealing the candy and then being given the whole factory as a result.
Yeah. And they plant the apple, Aslan hands him a gobstopper. Or just like a fistful of nerd ropes.
Yeah. I looked it up. I mean, he wrote it the year after C.S. Lewis died. So like he was like fully aware of like...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Statute of limitations.
A
big difference is Roald Dahl hated children. He thought they were vermin, basically.
I mean, he a lot of them die in his in his books for sure.
Yeah. So this whole thing choked me up, but it was at knowing the C.S. Lewis, like even though I read this book as a kid, like when, and a whole other layer too is like I remember reading this like when I was living with my mother really young, and like so this is all very emotional, and then knowing C.S. Lewis's experience on top of that, but it's very cool. And another thing that ties us into the next book is when the fruit was eaten to his core by his mother, Diggory took the core and planted it in its yard. And the tree grew just as well as its sister tree in Narnia. And sometimes it would blow in the wind when there was no wind, at least on Earth, but it was mirroring its sister tree in Narnia.
Cool.
And the tree was eventually blown down. But the wood was used to create a wardrobe.
The wardrobe.
Oh.
So this is how the next generation.
I was almost like the boat.
Well, part of the it could have been integrated into part of the hull, that like a mast or something. That does still make sense, right?
The tree was cut down to make the horse and a boy.
Yeah,
I get it.
Prince Caspian.
Look, it confused me 25 years ago. Apparently, it's still confusing me.
So. Yeah. Well, it's a nice ending and it leads nicely into the next book. Diggory's going to be older in the next book. We're going to follow the Pevensey kids and how they kind of stumble in. And this is when the witch is on the return, basically. And then we get the whole line, the witch in the wardrobe. There's seven ages to Narnia, and I think this covers like one of them.
Okay.
So there's a lot more. C.S. Lewis didn't name them ages, but fans since have kind of broken it down into
to milestone markers. Cool. Yeah. Great episode. Great. What fun. I hope you had fun, listener. And I hope you had so much fun that you're going to smash a 5 million star review for us and tell your friends and write out a review and talk about how great we are and how pretty we are. Thanks so much for listening. Honestly, it means the world to us, the forest of infinite worlds to us. Really. Thanks so much. Jimbo, do you want to talk about the Discord and your twitch.tv/loreboysjames?
I actually don't. Peter, what do you got?
At Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. Drop us a follow. Like some pictures. Come say hi. Always appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Last chance, Jimbo.
Nope. I don't want to. I'm done.
If you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/.
Was the episode done?
The Loreboys?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why we're doing this part.
No, I know. I was looking at pictures of Diggory Kirk on Google Images.
Pete's Googling Diggory Dick. Forgot the episode ended.
Oh, fuck.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where you can get some bonus content for us. We're looking at doing short-form video content, maybe long-form video content in the near future. We're still figuring out the technical side of that kind of stuff, but you guys incentivizing us by showing us that you care, all our patrons, really, really does mean the world, and it's why we put in the extra effort, despite having full-time jobs and also families and pets in heat, and also pets that hate and cry. and Jamie spends a lot of time crying while editing the podcast. So,
yeah, this is our first one, man. I gotta say, usually the podcast doesn't hit as hard as it does, but C.S. Lewis got me. He got me.
And if you don't trust Patreon, of course, we have Loreboys Prime. We have a very special prize for everyone who signs up this week. You're going to be given a vote, a ballot, if you sign up, and we're going to be voting on which of parents, Peter's parents, to kill. Of course, so you can.
I have a stepmom who's bonus as well, so it's 2+1.
Well, no, yeah. So yeah, if we cross a certain threshold of subscriptions, we will also kill
stretch
Pete's
goals
stepmom.
To kill Tammy.
If we're counting stepmoms, and if we're counting stepmoms, I've already lost a pair.
Yeah,
that's not fair.
And you yet have some who you wouldn't mind seeing gone. I'm sure. Jamie's the Cinderella of the podcast. Yes, evil stepmother.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but go ahead, sign up. You'll be given a vote on which one you want to vote for. Either you can vote for Pete's mom or Pete's dad, or third option, you can vote to make Pete choose. I'm secretly hoping that's the one that wins.
In front of them, too. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Pete, I know you're thinking to yourself, like, boy, it is going to be really hard to look my parent in the face and tell them that I want them dead. But think about how special that other parent will feel when they see you choose them for life, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so, that's true. That wouldn't traumatize either one of them forever.
Yeah. we'll put both parents on each side and we'll drop Pete in the middle and we'll see which side he runs to.
Yeah, which
side.
Yeah.
Here, Petey, I got a pocket of cedar dust, huh, buddy? I think that would cost you a lot of
boys.
Out.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.